Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. And I got a dilly of a program for you today. I'm very grateful for you to be with me on this 21st day of March, 2021. We're going to talk about, so many things about the spiritual practice and the superstitions, I think, that are around them. And there are so many that are around the spiritual practice, the authentic one. I am always amused and amazed at what people ask me, the questions they ask me about the practice, about what it's all about, what it is, what it'll do to you, and all of the hyperbole of it all, the superstitions about it, you know. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I have three interesting questions. I want to say this to you. You know, I know everybody thinks that they're normal, or they think that they know what is normal, or they think that they're okay being who they are. A lot of people like to think of themselves as this is what you get, this is who I am kind of person, and there's nothing wrong with that. And while I will not argue that point with you, though I could, I won't, I do feel that we have a certain responsibility, both to ourselves and the people around us that we say we love, to try to transcend, emerge out of the human and into the divine, and find that beautiful, sweet spot within us, and maybe share that with people, maybe even share that with family and friends, and be able to, shall we say, live a more conscious and productive life. But I just don't think that that is something that most of us are interested in at all, in any way, shape, or form. So when you enter into an authentic spiritual practice, you can't keep running off of the same gasoline you once ran on. You just can't. You have to, the octane has to go up a little bit here. You have to live a little differently on the inside. You have to live for things that are beyond the sake of survival and society and what people are afraid of and all of that. An authentic spiritual practice is very, very difficult for the average person, because the average person is very insecure. They live out of insecurity. Take away their what they think of as their self, or the security of what they think of is their self, and then you're left with what is, and that kind of person generally and conveniently isn't enough to practice. This is why we're afraid of death. It just obliterates the human part of us to such a degree that we don't exist anymore. I'm watching, you know, how students have died in my group over the years, and how quickly they are forgotten. I mean, quickly. Then, oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, oh yeah, her. Yeah, or you know, him. Yeah, yeah, I remember. And you're going to be forgotten very quickly, no matter where. You know, your family may not, your immediate family may not, but your friends, and a lot of them are going, you're going to become vague very quickly in the next, after your death, maybe 5 to 6 years, you're going to be very vague. And depending upon the impact you might have had on them, both what they think of as positive and negative. So it goes into many, let's just get into it. Let's see what an authentic spiritual practice is. And, you know, looking at it from the point of view of authenticity and being genuine, let's see how far we go inside with this today. First one comes from Ramsey. He lives in Los Angeles. By spiritual, do you mean that you have to give up having fun? I think life is about having fun. And then he goes into, does that mean that I have to give up the following? Are you ready? Sports, sex, news, politics. He goes into, let's see, what was the other thing here? Playing games. That's really important to him. I don't know how old Ramsey is, but there you are. Do you ever wonder if Buddha or Jesus had fun? Do you ever wonder about that? Do you ever sit in the closet and think, I'm going to meditate here, but I wonder if they had any fun, you know? I wonder if they went out and to a bar and had a few drinks or whatever. You ever wonder that? I think the reason, Ramsey, people think the way they do about what they do is based on the whole idea of escaping themselves, working on not being the person we know we really are. We try to be something other than what we are, and then we try to add different personas and apps to our activities, our brain, our emotions. We play out a different narrative. We just get involved so much in the silliness of living to pleasure other people, to become popular to other people, to become better than other people, all this craziness that we live by. So we miss our entire life. Authenticity. What a spiritual practice does is it brings authenticity to the forefront. And you really have to see how you and I have been living and acting out of our genetic inheritance and our DNA. So our DNA runs our survival mechanism, and our genetic inheritance runs the interpretation of that DNA and makes it whatever it is to be practical in our life. And that's the way we simply put, that's what we do. Your mental acuity, your emotional acuity, your physicality is all governed by your DNA and your genetic dispositions that you have within you. So with all this being said, is a spiritual practice, can you have no fun in it? I remember many years ago, there was a magazine called Playboy, and they had a picture of Jesus laughing in it. And it just brought an uproar to the religious community to see a smile on that man's face. They just couldn't handle it. And I always thought it was pretty cool, because that's not a position you generally see, authors and artists painting. They always paint his tragedy. And when you go into a church, generally speaking, there is that cross hanging there in front of you, and that is to remind you of the agonizing death of Jesus. I don't know. I mean, Buddha, we just see him sitting in a pretty garden with a smirk on his face, according to, you know, what statue you have, and with his eyes closed. But do you think he ever laughed out loud? Do you think he ever had a, you know, good hearty laugh about whatever? Do you think he had a sense of humor? I don't think people really look at that. They think, oh, no, they were special people. They were, you know, very, very, no. Jesus doesn't laugh. Buddha doesn't laugh. You think they played Skittles or something like chess or cards or anything like that? I think what you're asking me is kind of silly, but it is exactly the way our minds work, all of our minds. Yeah, do you feel guilty if you're a meditator and then you go out and have fun? It depends on what the fun is. If the fun deteriorates your meditation, if the fun deteriorates your ability to gain what is often called mindfulness, I call it non-duality mind, when you are having fun and you are engaging in something and it's emotional and it has emotional connections. What is really happening to you? What is going on within you? Are you in demise of your meditation? That's something I can't answer for you because everybody's different. I have fun, but my fun is different now. My fun is maybe in what I do around the house, how I clean the house, how I chop wood, carry water, how I look at my life, even with a sense of humor. My fun is different. I've never been a drinker. I never went to bars. I never did any of that. Just did not appeal to me. I watch football. I have a really good time with that, but after a while, I get tired of it, and I want to go do something else. I enjoy the human experience for what it is, but I don't make it my life, and I think that is what you're asking. How do I not make it my life? And that is something you have to figure out. How far do you go before you're over the top, over the line? That is something you must really comprehend deep inside you. You have to decide where your spiritual life begins and where it continues in other forms. Not ends, but continues in other forms. And if you can bring your sense of consciousness into anything, I think it can be very, very fun. And for me, it's all about humor. I think humor is huge. I like irony. I live in the humor of irony. I sometimes borderline there a little bit on the sarcastic side, but it is what it is with me. And that's something I have inherited evidently, but nonetheless, and less than none, I don't take it too far. Everything is good if it's in proportion to your practice, in proportion to gaining consciousness, in proportion to love. And if it gets cruel and unkind, then you've gone over the top. If it gets obsessive and compulsive, well, then again, I've gone over the top. So only you can decide what that's really all about for you. And Ramsey, a spiritual practice has nothing to do with the human suffering that we put ourselves through due to obsession. I am going to say this publicly, and I hope you understand. It does require discipline. And in that discipline, there is a sense of suffering when you can't just do everything you want to do. And if that causes you great suffering, then so be it. That is the issue. But that is not the sum and substance of an authentic spiritual practice. So smile. I loved my master in India. He told jokes in the middle of discourses that were very serious, and they were all very much to the liking of all of us, but they had a point to them, a real point, and that is something that I think is extremely important. Thank you, Ramsey, for listening, and also thank you for your kind comments, and please forgive me. Namaste. The next one is from Tim in Lofton, Nevada. Can you live a normal life and become spiritual at the same time? I don't see how it would be possible. And then Tim goes into all the things that his family would say about him if he ever really got serious about all this. I don't think you should think about your family and pretentiousness of them and their opinion of you. If you're going to live according to the dictates of your family, then you're going to find you're going to be unhappy for the rest of your life. You're not going to have an authentic life. You've got to explore beyond the ideas, the ideals, the genetic impulses of your family to really understand the nature of what you're all about and what your livingness is all about. So I don't know. I mean, Tim, how far do you want to go? Can you have a normal? What's a normal life? You know, eating, pooping, playing, working, sexing. I don't know what you call a normal. I don't know. You know, a normal life is, for me to sit here and say what a normal life is would be very assuming of me. And I don't like to do that. I mean, for some people, a normal life is to be a crook, a liar, a cheat, two-faced, hypocrite. That's normal for a lot of people, you know, corrupt. For other people, it's more of about helping other people, and a normal life is tending to the needs of other people. That's normal for some. Is there a normal? I don't think so. I have never seen it. And there are traits in people that are the norm. Everybody's afraid of death. Everybody wants more than what they have. Everybody thinks they know everything, and nobody forgives. And that's the end of that. It just goes on from there and just spirals down. So I don't know what you call normal. But if normal has to do with your genetic inheritance and how you live by the impulse of that generic inheritance, which is emotional, then no, you can't. The whole object of an authentic spiritual practice is to break the bonds of what most people would say is their normal inclination. They live by these inclinations of good and bad, right and wrong, just the way they like to live. And they believe in these normal inclinations, and they do it. They have no divine sense of reality. They don't even... They're not even interested in it. They want nirvana. They want heaven on earth. And they think that is what is the inclination for, you know, good things to happen and the reward for a spiritual life. The average person lives off reward and punishment. So if you're going to be doing that, then you're going to miss. Now, do you want to live off reward and punishment? Is what you're asking me, do you live off a better life, a more normal life, a more rigorous normal? I don't know what you're thinking, how you're thinking, or what that's all about. I can just say that it is breaking away from the norms of what is an assumed good life. Assumed. To eat, drink, and be merry and have everything you want. That's the assumption of most people. So normal is not straying too far away from social norms and what we would consider being like everyone else, or a little bit better than everyone else, or whatever. This is how we live on the inside of our head, and we miss the magnitude of love in us. And for a lot of people, it doesn't matter how much love they miss. They just don't care. They don't see it as anything that is significant or important. There's a great deal of goodness that lives inside the heart of the authentic, not the human heart. The human heart is full of disappointment and assumption and impetuousness, as it were. The human heart can be turned easily into hate and vengeance very quickly. I've watched people that I married when my youth, and they got married, and I love, you know, Harry or Sally so much, you know. And then 10 years later, they hate each other, and they're fighting over a fork. You know, it just is ridiculous. You can't trust the human heart. And if you give yourself over to that human heart, you're going to be a miserable person. So can you say, can I live a normal life and still be spiritual? I don't know what you call normal. You got to give up that whole idea that there is a norm and explore and go beyond whatever it is that you're afraid of. Afraid of maybe the rejection of your friends and family. I don't know. What could they object to? That you sit in silence every day? That you... are generous and kind and forgiving, compassionate? Is that what they would protest against? And if so, then you've got to wonder is normal good for you? And is there such a thing? And there's all sorts of crap that goes on with that. There you go, my friend. Tim, I hope it helps. I hope you, and I'm glad you enjoy the website at aspire.org. Thank you for going there, and please forgive me. Namaste. The last question is really interesting. It's from somebody. Anyway, his name's Edward. We'll go there. He says, I listen to you every day and enjoy what you have to say, but you're annoying. Why? Edward. Edward, I have never been accused of being suave-vous. I have never been accused of that. I have been terribly misunderstood, but I'm okay with that because in some ways I perpetrated it on purpose. So it's by my own doing that that has happened. So I want to say that right off the bat. I'm always devising ways of thinning out the herd. And when the herd would get too big, I would thin it out on purpose. And I wanted to see who could withstand change and would not be insulted. One of the first things, Edward, you've got to understand in the practice is you can't be insulted. If you're insulted, you miss. And by being insulted, it means that you quit before the game was over. You quit before the book was fully written. You quit before the song was sung. You have to be patient. You have to see what your sensibilities are all about. And part of being insulted is to accept disgrace willingly. And that means that you start to see things in the light of the way they are and not the way you believe they're happening. And then you got to question, am I the standard for being, shall we say, suave-vous? Am I the standard for the norm of thinking of what is civil and not, of right, of wrong, of good, of bad, of having good taste and all of that? You've got to see that for what it is. So when you're in an authentic spiritual practice, you go through many, many layers of yourself. Some are just downright gross. Some are just downright unappealing. They're humiliating. That's why Jesus talked about it in the Beatitudes of being poor in spirit. That was the first thing he talked about. Blessed is he who is poor in spirit. What does it mean to be poor in spirit? It means that you are humble. So everything is there to humble us. And that often requires humiliation. And humiliation to me is a choice. It's how I've lived with my ego. And if I've lived with my ego as the sum and substance of myself, as the identity of myself, as myself, then, oh my God, what have I got? I've got nothing here. I've got nothing, as one of my students says, nothing here. You don't have anything. To be insulted and to not be annoying. You think Jesus wasn't annoying? You think the Buddha was not annoying? Not that I'm either one of them. Or do you think that Lao Tzu was annoying? He ran away from his students. He said things that really grinded them. And if you don't have a teacher who's grinding you, then you're not going to be made into plant. You're not going to be made into the bread. You're not going to be for consumption. And most people are not fit for human consumption. They're only fit for fear and hate. I got to get out of here. I'm losing time. Anyway, thank you, Edward, for your question. I'm sorry I'm annoying, but keep listening. It's annoying to do so. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you for listening, all of you. And please forgive me, eh? Namaste.